are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Do you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
Our government cares about
you. They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
I'm running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy.
Okay.
We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hopefully everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great weekend, a great weekend that you will do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. I know in the Midwest it's going to be tough. Because it's freezing, it's snowing, even coming up into the New England states. And then it'll be on down this way in Atlanta come Tuesday or so they say. Man, can't tell me, man, climate change ain't real. So, once again, this is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other program that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Immediately following this program on Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. On Monday evenings, all times I'm giving are Eastern times. Monday evenings is Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, Brother Wahad. And then immediately following that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesday. And then Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 as well. And then Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters.
This call is being recorded.
It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. on Fridays. And then on Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's not me, it's Sister PLC with her program, Revive. And then Sunday evening, once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m., the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Try to get through these announcements as I'm trying to get through them as quick as I can because I have a guest today and I'm excited about it. And I know I've been promoting it and you should be too. Brother Jeremiah Kamara, the brother who developed the documentary Contradictions, the book, The Holy Lockdown, Does the Church Limit Black Progress, and The New Doubting Thomas. And of course, Slave Sermons. If you've ever checked that out on YouTube. If you haven't, do it. We Buy Black, WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. They have a kiosk if you don't want to go online. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. Check them out. You can get those products right there. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba. Africa for the Africans, and Brother Bomani Tahimba is ready to take some more of our people over to the continent. He's going to South Africa November 22nd to December 2nd. He's going to Johannesburg and Cape Town.
The number to call Brother Bomani is 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. And then in December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going back to Ghana. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, the one that it just had back in May, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And Dr. Renoko Rashidi, my good brother Dr. Renoko, is going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau, January 21st through December 4th, 2020. Go to his website, drrunoko.com, and check out the good information and the price for going to those three countries next year. Okay, then as a special, they have permission to visit the radiocarbon dating lab established by the great scholar and historian, Dr. Shekhanta Diop. So you don't want to miss that. That's going to be a great thing. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna is having an open house this Saturday, from 1:30 to 5:30 at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End area here, located at 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard here in Atlanta in the West End. And they'll be featuring cards and calendars and canaras and get your candles, brothers and sisters, get your candles, because I know a lot of times, and if you don't get them now, you'd be like, man, I can't do my Kwanzaa kit because I can't find no damn candles, you know. So also, too, there's a jazz session during the open house from 2:30 to 4:30. Enjoy free jazz with Rosemary Robinson and Commons Music Group. Okay, you can browse and munch and listen to those sounds. Also, too, there, Black History, their African History class, Know Thyself, Brother Baba Olatunji, will be going on at 1:30 till 3:30 at the Shrine. Know Thyself, 1:30 to 3:30. If you can't make that, but you would like that information, brothers and sisters, you can contact the Shrine. They have a multimedia library that is now over 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. I got the one that when it was at 4.5, so I got 2.5 terabytes to go. 7 terabytes of video files, images, audio files, books, and so forth. So check out the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Located in the Greenbrier Mall is the Medu Bookstore, which is right next to the kiosk of We Buy Black. So it's right there. Can't miss it. The Medu Bookstore, located in the Greenbrier Mall. They have books, cards, certificates, T-shirts, and so forth. Check them out. And also to my good friend in Lithonia, Brother Kazimde Ajamu, with the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The number to call for the Medu Bookstore, I apologize, is 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263. And the number to call for the Black Dot is 404-519-8107. And if they don't have the book that you're looking for, believe me, they'll get it for you. Us Lifting Up, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And their Thursday night broadcast last night at 9 p.m., and keep this number in reference for every Thursday night at 9 p.m., the Us Lifting Us Ulu radio broadcast, 929-477-2789. Akabin Institute, Brother Baba Baruti and his lovely wife, Ya Baruti. Once again, next week, she'll be on, next week, Wednesday, she'll be on for a few to talk about Kibuka, remembering the middle passage through the eyes of our ancestors. Baba Baruti's presentation is always, and her children is always outstanding. And that's next week, Saturday, November 16th, from 5 to 9 at the Sweet Spot, 675 Metropolitan Parkway here in Atlanta. And, of course, please donate to Akabin Institute. That's the school that they have. Akabin Institute. Make your check money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. And if you want to use Cash App or PayPal, please do so. $ YAAM Baruti, Baruti. Sister Gabby, I've been mentioning her since I met her some months ago. She's in Haiti, in the northeastern portion of Haiti. She is doing outstanding work. Go to her website. Check out what she's doing. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E, dash, Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sister Gabby. And the Black Talk Radio Media Project, where I'm on Black Talk Radio Network, the one of the largest Black Talk, the largest or most successful Black Talk media outlet that there is. I'm happy to be here. But, of course, we want to expand and get better, so we need funds. So go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. Scroll down when you're on the page. You'll see the donation button on to the right and make your contributions to the Black Talk Radio Network Project 2019 Media Fund. Brother Scotty Reed. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. November 7th. Children who want to be respected must understand the power of respect. Occupant Institute students. The power of respect is shown in the result of following those who have opened the path to our way. Therefore, if we are not to gain respect in ever intent of the concept, if we are going to put forth the extraordinary time and energy necessary to be respected without question, we must go back into our ancestral spirit and retrieve and then consciously participate in our way. We must seriously study the working traditions it was engendered and the answers to the questions of why these particular thoughts and behaviors were best suited for maintaining a dynamic African sanity. We have to accept the trust our ancestors' wisdom, and we must not allow a Europeanized sense of respect based on force to alter our practice of our traditions based on mutual respect our ancestors had mastered. If we are truly to be African and not some menticidal artificial version of it sustaining under European cultural domination, we cannot commit treason against our ancestors' way. For we are those who we respect. We become them if the respect is sufficient. Affirm, I respect and I am respected by African people. Affirm, I respect and I am respected by African people. November 8th. The person who is ever ready for war is never defeated. I repeat. The person who is ever ready for war is never defeated, an African proverb. Interestingly, some Africans claiming to be warriors are not quite sure that we are at war. They hedge on certainty because in their minds, there is not ample evidence before them at this particular moment, even though they are fully conscious of our enemy's consistent historical record of genocide against us. They sit waiting for a new defined observable sign, presumably from the heavens, or sneaking up to their back door in full armor with safeties on. They wait foolishly in fear of taking the first or any step. However, others of us are clear. We know, we are certain, we need no additional proof of the onslaught. We need no more litanies. The senseless, unprovoked, vicious murder of one African was enough evidence. Therefore, the conversation over two centuries ago, none of which they have to offer to treacherous smiles, worthless trinkets, whitewashed degrees, lying media, nothing that they could possibly offer would cause us to question their genocidal intent. We know them. We have no friends among our enemies, only sources of information, if that. Nothing changes us from being in a state of war and readiness short of our return to power. And even then, readiness will be with us forever. We are ever ready, always in a state of preparedness, survival bag ready, battle gear in hand. We will never be caught off guard again. Affirm, I am ready. Affirm, I am ready. I'm going to read tomorrow's Inye Sesim, and then we'll get to our guest. November 9th, intellectual disobedience is the ultimate act of decolonization. Moreover, it is the hallmark of a liberated mind. We must shield our children from intellectual insanity of others' psychosis. However, to teach, we must know who we are and what our children must equip themselves to do. Becoming African-centered thinkers requires that we reconceptualize our reality in African terms and ways of knowing and doing. As a function of correcting, defining, incorporating, and acting as Africans, our reality naturally changes. Power shifts and balance returns in a process of visualization and activity. Because we think so, it becomes so. Reconceptualization is the process of searching out and or creating more appropriate terms and especially meaning to terms that better fit the logical self-interest, nation-building practices of our research and our agenda. The true purpose of study is to teach the student about his or her power. Acquaintance with one's power is the only means by which an individual can determine and fulfill his or her own destiny. And if the individuals forming a nation do not know and cannot act on their power, the power of their people's asili, their cultural asili, the power of their culture, the power manifested in them through their ancestors, then they do not constitute a nation. It is only an aggression of powerlessness. Disassociated individuals easily victimized by other nations or on missions of exploitation and domination. Affirm, I am reconceptualizing our reality in African terms. Affirm, I am reconceptualizing our reality in African terms. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Okay, brothers and sisters, the time is here and the time is now. I have on the line with me the brother who produced the documentary, Contradiction, the brother who wrote the book, The Holy Lockdown, Does the Church Limit Black Progress? And the brother with the new Doubting Thomas, we have on the line with us, Brother Jeremiah Kamara. Good morning, dear brother.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie. How are you, man?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to have you on. I always talk about trying to find a way to get you on. And then when I heard you on Time for an Awakening 2 Sundays ago, I was in the airport. I had a short flight. I'm trying to get back to, I was in Oklahoma City, trying to get back here to Atlanta. So I heard a good portion of it prior to getting on the plane. See, I didn't get a direct flight from Oklahoma City to Atlanta. I got it from Oklahoma City to Dallas. Which is like a 40 minute flight. So I got a chance to listen to the last half of the presentation.
All right, man.
Yeah. brothers and sisters, we have Jeremiah Kamara. I want you to tell us about yourself and what you've been doing and how things have been going for you.
Well, right now, you know, I'm still waiting on the networks. We have, you know, still making a decision on what format or network that my latest documentary entitled Holy Hierarchy, The Religious Roots of Racism in America. So once we make that decision, we'll let everybody know. And I'm excited about that. That film basically attempts to explain how the beliefs in colonial America in a supreme being led to beliefs in supreme human beings, and how these notions work their way into the legal system, ultimately turning racism into an institution. And so I'm excited about that, and that's basically where a lot of my work, you know, recently has been, trying to get this thing on the right network and platform.
Okay.
And so doing a lot of traveling, just came back from the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Wisconsin.
Oh, was that Madison? Because I know I remember.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. That was real, really nice. I wish there was more black people there. but of course, the organization has to do more, you know, to reach out. Tell people, you know, we're out here.
The problem with us,
but we're out here.
Well, you're right, and there are, and we are, because I'm, you know, I'm not. I believe in God. I believe in. you know, in an entity and a spirit higher than ourselves. But I don't believe in the religions that have been imposed, particularly on us, especially the two proselytizing religions, Christianity and Islam. They have both had devastating effects on our people to back then and definitely to this present day. And let's hope not in the future, because if we continue to do that, we won't have a future, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, a lot of times, you know, Brother Oshi, people don't have the discernment enough to continue to believe in a God while at the same time letting go of their, you know, religious ideologies. I don't believe in gods. I don't say God. I say a God or this God or whatever, because if you don't put the article in front of it, it implies that there is one. And that's something that, you know, as far as something that's higher than ourselves, I don't really know anything that's higher than us. We are that we are all that exists.
Yeah.
We are the stuff of stars. So we are the highest elements in the universe that we know of. And so, you know, if we saw ourselves as gods and goddesses, certainly you wouldn't have the taking of lives.
Right.
That we have, the disrespect of one another that we have. So I don't look outside of myself or outside of you for any entity or envision any entity that's watching me 24 hours a day and concerned about me having sex without a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be 30,000 children today that are going to die due to starvation and disease. 27 million sex slaves, and there's this God that's specifically watching me, making sure that the loan closes on my car, and I'm very happy, and I thank God about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems erroneous that we would think that there's somebody who's actually, you know, who would cause a great deal of paranoia as well, to believe that somebody is constantly watching you and you're hurling out these praises for the most trivial matters, when yet, like I said, children are going to starve to death. 30,000 in the next 24 hours are going to be gone.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So to have a God who cares about who won the game and, you know, you passing your emissions test here in Georgia seems pretty erroneous. So I don't know if we all have the responsibility to still believe in a God and yet have and abandon the religious ideologies that we have been indoctrinated with, you know, especially for churchgoers.
Well, you know, they have a deep stranglehold on the minds of our people. In fact, I always like to say they have a vice grip. They have a vice grip on our minds, if you understand it, too. Once the vice grip is set, you can't pull it apart. You know, it's locked, you know. And the only way that it can come apart is that knob at the end of the handle. And the turning of that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self, information about who and what you are historically and culturally. And as you continue to turn and you continue to infuse yourself with that, then you can open it up and see the European for who and what they are and all the things that they have done. Not that you challenge them, because there's not a damn thing you can do about them. They have an agenda. They don't give a damn. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior, and they're going to impose that on all humanity. And one of the main ways that they do it is this Christian religion with the image of Jesus or their God as themselves. See,
and so even the whole act of monotheism, you understand?
Yeah.
When we say that God, that's about as anti-village as you can get.
Yeah.
Right there, you know. So if you had women who were participants in the making of these various biblical doctrines, then you would have a totally different story. You've got the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, because they were men.
That's right.
They wrote that.
That's right.
Okay, so to leave out the women, to leave out the children, to leave out the animals, leave out the land, the grass, the soil, the sun, the rain, the water, and all that is problematic mm-hmm. in terms of monotheism. See, the devil is exclusive to monotheism, where you have a system of monotheism of one God, then you're going to have these. That again is akin to the religiosity or the religious ideology that is so pervasive in the mindset of black people today. Mm-hmm. You know, when you compel someone to accept something without any type of proof or evidence, in my opinion, I see that as a form of mental abuse.
Yes.
And one of the reasons is because your brain just does not operate like that. Mm-hmm. Your brain it has to be perverted in the sense to believe in things without proof. The only way that can happen is through consistent indoctrination. Mm-hmm. So we see that consistent indoctrination, in many aspects of life. First of all, the church, you have to go every Sunday, or you go Saturday, or you go Wednesday Bible study. You have to be consistently indoctrinated with an idea that there's a God, a loving God, that is looking out for your best interest, that is watching out mm-hmm. for you, is protecting you, and all this type of stuff, which is erroneous as well. That's mm-hmm. That's another issue when you talk about a God that is a preventative type of God, or a God that is a healer or a protector. But when you look at other areas of life where you're consistently indoctrinated, the NBA, the NFL, you got mm-hmm. football on Monday, football Thursday, Saturdays, Sunday, and it's talked about 7 days a week.
Right.
And there may be a time 20 years from now or 30 years from now or whatever that black people can look and say, damn, we were still slaves. That's really the only real source of big money that we're getting is through sports and entertainment.
That's right.
You go into any sports bar, you're going to see us dominating the screen. Mm-hmm. But yet we are not in the thick of things as far as the economics of things.
No.
We're not included. Mm-hmm. There's no real inclusion, business inclusion in this country. So we're used, we're exploited, mm-hmm. and we're happy about how high we can jump and how fast we can run to the extent of everything else. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that there's something wrong with sports, but our attention is mainly directed toward mm-hmm. those same things that it was directed towards in the 1600s, and that's a black body being exploited, making money for yeah. white America. You're still doing that.
No, in fact,
that relates to the church as well. The only thing that we're still doing today that we were doing in the 1600s is subscribing to a monotheistic God, using our bodies to make money for some other entity than ourselves.
Right. Right.
Those are only two things that we're still holding on to. Mm-hmm. So at some point in time, we should have, it seems like someone or something would have crossed your path and said, wait a minute, this is really a phenomenal thing here to be energetic about the belief system and the dogma that your conqueror provided to you. Mm.
Yeah,
you should have ran across that in some time, but that's consistent in indoctrination through the NFL, through the NBA, through the church, mm-hmm. making you think that these things are of vital importance. When yet, my question becomes now is, if blacks could not be monetized, where would we be?
Yeah.
Your church, your mega church that you think is all black, is being monetized. There are groups larger than that mega church that are collecting money from you as well. Don't think it's all going to your
preacher. Wait a minute. So you mean to tell me that a T.D. Jakes, Creflo Dollar.
Absolutely. They're tied to other companies and other groups. The church is a business. They're even tied to the Vatican. You don't believe it? If they start preaching a doctrine that's different from what their Catholic fathers told them, then they're going to lose parishioners.
Mm.
You can't go outside of the landscape that you that the Bible presents or that you were given. You have to stay within that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have this, you know, prosperity gospel.
Right.
It's really not a prosperity gospel. It's an American gospel, because you could take that same gospel to a place called Haiti or any other place that would not support that economic type of growth that you're preaching about, and it just would not help them in any kind of way. So you take this gospel of abundance and all of this type of thing, and we use that as our model for success.
Well, you know, what was interesting to me in looking up information, because I've been railing against Christianity, particularly, well, any proselytizing religion particularly, but Christianity for sure, because Christianity purports itself to be historical. That's the problem I have. See, in ancient Kemet, which of course that's all this stuff is based on, they understood that it was myth, it was allegory. You know, they didn't believe that humanly that a man had a head of a dog or a head of a hawk. No, they understood they were metaphors. I can't get that word out. But anyway.
But the Bible is historical.
Okay.
It's not history.
Okay, right.
So right. If you were to teach it as something that they did. They did invent this. That mm-hmm. did happen. Mm-hmm. Historic.
Okay.
But the stories in it are not history.
Right. The stories, you see what I mean? In it. The people
right.
in it.
They're not history. Nor the places.
Mm-hmm.
And we're disingenuous. Like, we see this Bible as this sacred book.
Yes.
Okay, that's got all of these phenomenal stories. First of all, it's impossible to read the Bible in its entirety with the goal of having some serious understanding and read it from cover to cover and come away with the notion that it's a great book. That it's a very great book. I don't know. I mean, the only way you could do that is if you somehow comprehended things in a way that weren't really presented.
I tried to read it back in the 80s. I read the Bible from Genesis to Revelations. Also, too, at the same time, Isaac Asimov had his book come out, Isaac Asimov's Guide to the Bible, which helped me a lot with understanding these stories, which were not real stories, you know, and then I began to understand that the Bible was not the infallible word of God, you know, at all, and that it really was a book that was a product of enslaving the minds of people, you know, and also too that Christian religion is an individualistic religion, you know.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you got. I'm blessed.
Yeah. Yep. And highly favored.
You know, I have a personal relationship.
Yep.
You know. Now, are there stories in the book? Absolutely, that you can learn from.
Mm-hmm.
But are there stories in most books? Absolutely, that you can learn from. I would be, you know, disingenuous to make the claim that some of Dr. Seuss' books were not very influential to me.
That's right.
If you
or any other
Green
fairy
Ham,
tale.
That really, Green Eggs and Ham teaches you to be persistent. Come on, man. You read that he chased that man everywhere, you know, despite multiple rejections.
Mm-hmm.
But he was consistent. The Al Perkins' book, I think that was the author, The Digging His Dog, teaches perseverance.
Okay,
how to be yourself. You can find these things. Now, mm-hmm. one of the books in the Bible, though, that I think is, first of all, it's one of the oldest books. They don't go in chronological order. You know, it's 1,500 years to compile all of this stuff. And they don't go in chronological order in terms of the year was created. But the book of Job
Oh, wow.
is definitely one of the oldest books. And the the fairy tales from that just it just oozes off the page.
He gets dogged out, don't he?
Just reeks with allegory.
Yeah.
And but that to me, the Book of Job is really the gluten that holds the whole loaf of the bread of Christianity together.
Okay.
And that we feed on, because even more so than Jesus, to be honest with you, because Job is a very primitive allegory. It's one of those things you would think about, you know, if you were devising stories to pass on to generations to come. It's very obvious to see this story, you know, but Job teaches us that all we have is because of God's blessing.
Mm-hmm. And it can be taken
and
from
if
you
we
in a
turn
minute.
Our backs mm-hmm. on this God or question this God, that we put ourselves in a position to lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if we just keep believing in this God and denying everyone and rejecting any and all information that might go against this God, not only will we maintain what we have, but we'll also be blessed more abundantly, you know, if we just keep believing. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no point in your analytical approach to the Bible, which they don't teach you to have because you're not supposed to use your own knowledge or lean onto your own understanding. But there's no part of that story over the years that had registered to you as mythological. You know, he had seven sons and he had the most beautiful daughters, you know, there in the land. Of course, Job had three daughters. And they were the most beautiful. And he had nice round numbers of sheep. You know, I think he had like 7,000 cattle or sheep or something like that, and 3,000 or 4,000 camels and, you know, 500-600, you know,
yeah, he was
oxen or whatever.
And he was living large, wasn't he? He was living in abundance.
Right. And 500 donkeys and all of this type of stuff. So you got to look at people that make that go to church that already are rich. You say people like Kanye West, people like Joel Osteen, and they're going to get together. He invited Kanye because it's money. He's an mm-hmm. entertainer. Mm-hmm. Kanye is the person that we know needs mental therapy.
Yes.
He's not there mentally.
Yes.
But Joel Osteen doesn't care about that. Joel Osteen cares about the money that they can bring. So here you got people that are rich, your athletes, your Steph Currys of the world, your Kevin Durants who make the sign of the cross, your mm-hmm. James Hardens who make the sign of the cross before they step out on the court and pay homage to their conquerors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that rich people do, they do this in order to maintain. Again, this mm-hmm. is this Book of Job coming into play, to maintain this wealth. And if they stick to him despite what they may go through in their career, that they will continue to be blessed abundantly even more so.
Mm-hmm.
So the rich people's relationship with religion is predicated upon maintaining something. And poor people's relationship with religion and involvement with church is predicated upon obtaining something. We need to get this. We're suffering. We need to get this. So you have this obtaining something and maintaining something. Mm-hmm. So Job is really the glue that holds it all together. And Job is also the book where if preachers somehow stumble upon a wall in the delivery of their sermons, Job will enable them. If they just revert to Job, it will enable them to climb over that wall, because we all can identify with that story. You see that story in marriages. If I stick with
That struggle.
My husband, if I stick with my wife, through these challenges, through these difficulties, that one day it will, you know, be okay and we can be together. If I stick with this problem that I have, you know, so Job is very relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that theological school, they really stress Job in many ways.
Yeah. overcoming all those obstacles. I mean, you mean constantly being, you know, losing it and gaining and losing and gaining, you know. And I think that's where the religion of prosperity gospel, while you see what you just said, that those who have it, they want to maintain it. And for those who don't have it, they want to acquire it. And so they go to this prosperity gospel, you know, and believing that your belief and your faith, you will get all these riches. And of course, the ministers will, you know, will preach that, that something's coming for you. God told me that, you know, you're going to get a blessing tomorrow. And of course, the minister is speaking specifically to you, you know, not just the congregants, but specifically to you. At least that's what your hope is. That's what your understanding is. And that you
right.
will
be blessed. It's so general. It's like the horoscope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, you can read anybody's horoscope, not astrology. I'm talking about the horoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And feel as though it's talking to you. They're generalizations.
Right.
I had one preacher, heard one preacher say, how many of y'all have had been late on the bill? You know, they're falling out over that. I mean, if you're 18, you've probably been late on the bill.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that's going to happen to probably 100% of people.
Right.
But we don't go there to be subjective and to read between the lines. That's not why we go. You know, we go there to worship. And during that worship, you know, we're not in the spirit of learning anything. We're there to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
We're there to push emotional buttons.
Yeah.
And they're going there to these prosperity churches because, first of all, they're being indoctrinated every Sunday, as we talked about. But they've been misled. They're misled because people that go and all their church-going friends, they've been led astray. And they're living in a fog of gullibility and ignorance. It is the churchgoers who are making the preacher rich. It's not because he's been chosen, because he has a special gift and he deserves to live this way and have this particular lifestyle for divine reasons. No, this man has a concordance and is able to construct his sermon in a way that would appear to the parishioners that he's very knowledgeable about what he talks about. And he may have some knowledge, of course, if you've been doing it for a long time. He may be able to memorize a lot of things in the Bible, but you're making your preacher rich.
Yeah.
Your ignorance is making the preacher's lifestyle. Your gullibility is the reason that your preacher lives like he does.
You know, when I think of that, you know, I know there's, within Christianity as it relates to us as American African people, there is the prosperity gospel, and then there's the liberation gospel, you know. And I'm sorry, I just can't see there's anything that the European has given us that will help us, that will truly liberate us. That's truly me. Even though you can put an African face on it, as many people did, and of course, as you probably remember when the Catholic Church came out with a picture of Jesus as looking African with, you know, with locks and so forth. Many of our people objected to that, let alone the Caucasians objecting to that, you know.
That's called slavery. So that's why I said we're still enslaved. You know, I know that's a cliche, but I don't think that's a cliche that we really, really are hearing or really are focusing in on. You're still a slave.
Yeah.
Most of your money that you make are from sports and entertainment.
Yep.
If you could not be monetized, what would you be doing? There are certain areas in business that you just are not going to penetrate.
Right. You're not going to get into. Exactly. Even to this day.
They have hundreds of thousands of years head start on you.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not going to, you're just not going to get into that. So if you want to talk about liberation, your liberation starts with a paradigm shift.
That's right.
to where you change your value system. If you're seeing the people who make all the money all the time as your role model, what people have as opposed to who people are and what people do, then you're going to remain in the same, you know, theistic type of system. But if you change your paradigm and say, hey, well, wait a minute, that's not something that I aspire to. That's not necessarily something that, that is good for the whole, for the community. You know, there are many groups that are still trying to process the whole concept of ownership of land. Mm. Half the mountains in Southern California are owned. How can you own a mountain? How can you own a body of water?
Yeah.
So there are certain things within this Christian faith, okay, that teaches people that prayer and faith and belief and praise and worship and all these things are techniques that's going to bring about your desired results, that's going to solve your problems, okay? Now, let's get back to why you have not questioned this. Aside from the fear, let's say that your fear was manageable, and you decide to look subjectively at your belief system. It wouldn't take you very long to see that you're being conned. The first thing that should come to mind and that should have you, you know, have your hair standing on your head is that it's not deed-based. And I tell people this all the time. It's not deed-based. It's belief-based. That is a con. That what I believe is of more value than what I do in deeds. That is a con.
Yeah.
So that means that I need you to believe the dogma that I put before you, because I know that by you believing this dogma, there's a sense of control that I'm going to have over you. So you have people, you know, that's why I say that religion is the gateway to gullibility. Because if I can get you to believe that there's a God who has a son who walked on water and who was born of a virgin, and there's a man who parted some waters and turned the river into blood, if I can get you to believe these things, then there's a whole list of other things that I can get you to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're operating in the fog of gullibility.
And
the other thing is, when a group comes to your land, which all the world is your land, but where you were residing, where you had families, where your culture was being developed, and they steal your land, they take your resources, your oil, your gold, your diamonds. Even if you just use them for adornment, they take everything and they give you this Bible. And the Bible says that thou shalt not steal. But if you steal or if you kill, you can redeem yourself, called redemption, by forgiving those who stole from you, and the thief can be redeemed by asking for forgiveness. Okay? So now, there's no provisions for returning what you stole. That's why you know it's a con.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there that says what you steal in order for you to get into heaven or to receive pleasure in the sight of this God, you must return what you stole. That would be reparation.
Right.
That would be all of the things. Yeah. There's no provisions in the Bible that speaks of that. That's con number two. You have more cons.
Yeah. Well, I'm tell you what, hold those cons, and we're going to come back. I'm going to take a break, and you can join this conversation, brothers and sisters. Dial 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blackTalkRadioNetwork.com. My guest today is Brother Jeremiah Kamara. You stick with us. I hope you can give some calls. He has some answers for you, brothers and sisters. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And my guest today is Brother Jeremiah Kamara. I'm going to forego the announcements that I do at this time to get back to some more conversation. Brother Jeremiah, and I got a person on the line, too, if you're going to take some calls. But let me just throw this in here. Christianity, being the individualistic religion that it is not going to provide hope for a mass of people. It may speak to you individually as, I got mine, you get yours, or I'm blessed and highly favored, even though my family, my community, African people are going to hell, but I'm blessed and highly favored. And I thought about these ministers who have amassed tremendous amounts of wealth, millions and millions of dollars personally, and of the top 10, Creflo Dollar and T.D. Jakes ain't even in the top 10. But there are three Nigerian ministers who are making tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. And you know how bad Nigeria and Ghana, when I first went to Ghana back in the 90s, you know, what turned me off so deeply was seeing posters of Caucasian Jesus all around, you know. And to me, it is a deep mental sickness that we are afflicted with that. And I know for some people, they say, well, you can't, you know, even though you're saying what we're saying today, you can't have us give up Jesus because we, you know, we are so indoctrinated. We can't. It is the crux of our problem. It is the reason why African people cannot come together and form some kind of functional unity for the betterment of our people.
Right. It's not just Jesus, it's a belief in a God, too, brother.
Okay.
See, that's the problem.
Okay.
It ain't just Jesus. That's just one of the problems.
Mm-hmm.
See, when you believe in that there's a God, a monotheistic God, that's going to handle your situation and handle your problem and cure your village and bring water to you and all this stuff, that's a problem right there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? You know, you got your guest, Bomani, that's going to South Africa. That their whole thing is, I ran into so many people in South Africa that could not really express a belief other than they were given it by their enslavers.
Mm-hmm.
They were looked on as, wait a minute, heathens. They don't want that legacy. You know, we opened up the show, and getting back to what you said, I believe that there is a God. Mm-hmm. My question is, if you didn't believe, you're still doing this show.
That's for sure.
It's not your belief, it's your deeds. Your mm-hmm. deeds are your gods. That's your gods and your goddess. It's what you do. Belief just means an acceptance that something is true. I'll mm-hmm. accept that something is true. You wouldn't say, Jeremiah, I believe you're on the end of this line. Because you know that.
I know that. That's right.
Right. Belief is not knowledge. We don't need to believe in anything. What we need to do is roll up our sleeves and get busy.
That's right.
In the realm of humanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter what you do, it's going to take human beings to bring it about.
That's right.
There is going to be no divine intervention. And when we had a cannabis meeting here in Atlanta about 4 years ago, Black Caucus cannabis meeting here in Atlanta. And I attended it, and they wanted to pray first. Yeah. Like, I mean...
Yeah.
You're on the bottom health-wise. Praying over your food is not turning the fat back into vitamin A.
That's for sure.
So I'm saying this whole notion and inclination and prevalence of belief itself is a problem. A belief in a God, what is more powerful than you? There are certain aspects of our world that can do things better than you. You can't out-dog a dog. A dog is better at what he does than you. You can't out-flea a flea. You're not better at being a shark than a shark is.
Mm-hmm.
But you are, nobody can out-human you. So every species is they're gods of their species. You're not greater than a bird at being a bird. Nothing is greater or lesser. This whole MVP, this is a European concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about, you know, this con. You know, again, that's a con job. You can't do anything without getting on your knees and saying a prayer. That's a con. You're wasting time. You can't have a meeting without 20 ministers coming to the damn meeting. We needed business people at the meeting. You got all these preachers coming.
Yeah, we need engineers at the meeting.
You have a problem with your marriage, you got to go talk to the preacher.
Mm-hmm.
You're living in the 50s and the 60s. That's what you did in the 50s. That's because the preacher, the preacher was the most revered force in our society, in black society. You were a school teacher or preacher, you were revered.
Yeah.
People, we have other positions now. We've climbed other ladders. You know, like the Asian proverb says, to insist on a spiritual practice that once served you in the past is to carry the raft on your back after you have crossed the river. You don't have to continue to carry the raft on your back.
Yeah, you passed that. You've moved on.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can take that tray out the bottom of your lip. The enemy's gone. You don't need to scare him that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You have to evolve. It's called evolution. You evolve. Your thinking evolves. You know, you live by faith. You're going to die by it as well. You have an abundance of faith. And, mm-hmm. you know, people talk about, you know, this spirituality. To me, that's very redundant. That's like water calling itself wet. You know you are ethereal. You just appear to be solid. But if you were to be observed under a high-powered microscope, you're vibrating particles. Mm-hmm. So you are an ethereal being to begin with.
Yeah, that, what did they say? We're stardust?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
if these stars did not, that's like, you know, with certain practices, religious practices, you know, Jehovah's Witness, for example, they're going to live on earth forever. You know, you're going to have 144,000 that are going to ascend to heaven and live near Jesus and God or whatever, Jehovah. And then you're going to have, these people that are living out their eternal existence on earth, petting lions and tigers and bears.
Oh my.
Now, the sun has a time limit.
Mm-hmm.
There is no foreverness with the current sun that we're under. They see stars exploding all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Stars that are much older than our little sun. So you're not going to be on Earth forever, but there's no science involved in that kind of thinking. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So they will have various blacks that would want to admonish other blacks, sort of like the Democrat-Republican thing, because we have learned about evolution, not believe in it, but have learned about what it is. Understood the difference between theories
mm-hmm.
and hypotheses. But yet, oh, that's that European, that's that Charles Darwin, that's that. I mean, see, that's silly to me.
Well, listen, my
brother, the reason that is silly is because that knowledge does not belong to anyone.
Right.
It's just like, just like music, right? Music, you didn't discover, like, the way that music is laid out in terms of the decibel, vibrational frequencies of certain sounds of music and certain tones. You didn't create that. That's found in nature. We just discovered
it. Right, right. Well, listen, we got some callers. We got some callers. I'm going to get some callers on to get a chance to talk with you, my brother. We have a caller, 225. 225, good afternoon.
Yes, good morning, Oshie. This is Pew. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Brother Pew. Go ahead. How you been?
Okay.
Good.
Pretty good. There's a ton of different things that I can talk about or I can ask about. But I guess one of the things I'm just going to make one suggestion, and then I'm going to ask you a question or ask your guests a question. The equation for knowledge is that knowledge is justified true belief. And so when people say knowledge is power, what they mean is that knowledge gives you a lever that enables you to do more with it than you could do, with just your bare hands. But when it comes to human beings, knowledge is not useful. What you need for human beings is you need motivation. And so the equation for motivation is that motivation equals justified personal belief. That is to say, it doesn't have to be true, you just have to believe it. And so if you want to get a group of people to organize, then you have to motivate them. And so you need something to motivate them with. And so in the past, there had been these notions of gods. Today, humans are being motivated by the dollar, the belief that with enough dollars, any problem you have ultimately can be solved. But let me get to the question. And by the way, there's a ton of things that I can talk about here or ask about here. But the question was, you mentioned the fact that the prosperity gospel was not viable in Haiti. But then you suggested that the prosperity gospel is viable here. And Oshie said in particular that many of us talk about being blessed and highly favored while at the same time our family is suffering. And so could you elaborate, how is it that the prosperity gospel is viable here and not viable in Haiti? Are you suggesting that somehow or another the black people here are, well, what are you suggesting? Could you elaborate
okay.
that some?
Good question. Good question, and thank you for your comments. Great comments. I don't think it's viable here. It's not viable. If it was viable, we wouldn't be in the economic condition. It's viable in terms of numbers. It creates a mega church. I forget what the total is. I think it's 22,000 or something like that. That constitutes a mega church, or 20,000 or something like that. But it's not viable in terms of what it's actually doing. There are many churches who have taught this prosperity, invited certain people in to preach, they've lost thousands, millions of dollars. Eddie Long's church was one of them who invited, a pastor to come in, and a lot of people invested. It's not what they believe or what they're hearing, it's what you do. So and I said on the last show, belief, knowledge is not power. I stated that.
That's right.
Emphatically. Knowledge is not power. Knowledge is potential power. You can take that and once potentially do something with it, but it doesn't mean it's power all in of itself. And I agree with you. They do have to motivate people. And people are motivated by money. This is why you see Kanye West shows selling out. He filled Soldier Stadium.
That's crazy.
In Chicago.
That's crazy.
The stadium. He's motor. It's money involved. That's how powerful, people that have money. They have these marketing giants that can go out and solicit people. They can reach people. It's not about, it's marketing. Mm-hmm. The prosperity gospels won't work in either one. So when I say wouldn't work. I'm saying that if they believe somehow that God would pour them out a financial blessing, there are certain economic conditions around the world where that's just not going to happen. Now, you might have someone to go to these prosperity gospels and claim that because they went to Creflo, they got that. They were blessed financially. That's confirmation bias. No, it's something you did, or you might have got a little luck or whatever. You might have hit the lottery or whatever. But it really is something that you did, you know, in order to get that money. It's called the law of compensation. So I don't think it will work that the prosperity gospel will work anywhere. And this is what I'm saying is, you know, we get back to this African, where you mentioned earlier in the show, or when you were presenting some readings, to right. have this mentality, to really have your true way of thinking, is not to be in love with this life of abundance necessarily. Mm-hmm. Not to be in love with a life with 10 cars in the driveway and, you know, mm-hmm. 150 pairs of shoes, sneakers.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Floyd Mayweather. I don't know the brother personally, but he comes across as a very lonely man. Now, if I was to obtain millions or billions of dollars, I can't imagine that being more gratifying than me waking up every morning and feeling good and me standing at the bus station every day at 3:30 waiting on my grandbaby to get off that big yellow bus. There's no amount of money that can buy that joy.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Yeah.
And that's the paradigm that we need to be on.
Okay, we got another caller. 602.
Yes, Brother Oshie and Brother Kamara. This is Marcus.
Hey, Brother Marcus, go ahead.
Hey, Marcus.
Yes, you know, that Brother Kamara, you are so correct. Because, you know, in the black community, we have all these churches overwhelming the black community. But yet still, poverty and crime is going through the roof. You see, in fact, the more churches you have in the community is the more crime, you see? So it would be better if the church was a factory, because we would be able to produce some jobs and create wealth, you know, something we could sell in the international market. Then another problem we have with these churches is they collect this money on Sunday and then they go and bank it in a white bank that use the money to gentrify our community. We're not even using the money to say, you know what, let's start a credit union or something that we could use to build the community. That money is going, as you said, to another community that used that money against us. So it's they are one of the biggest stumbling blocks, you know, in those churches. And that's why I see a lot of the young people, they're walking away from the church. You find more elderly people in the church now. Some churches I pass, I see 4 or 5 people in there. Ain't nobody going to church. Young people don't want to hear about it.
But you look at this, Brother Marcus, and I appreciate you calling. First of all, if there was no money in it, you wouldn't have any churches, because they wouldn't do it for free. Very little of them, but they get these incredible tax breaks, right?
Yes.
Incredible property tax breaks, which enables many preachers to live the luxury lifestyle that they had. Imagine us not paying any property taxes. You wouldn't have the abandonment in certain communities that you see if we didn't have to pay property taxes, because most people lose their house from the not from the mortgage or the rent, but from the taxes that they're unable to pay, okay? The other thing is, as far as these young people are concerned, you got droves of young people that are pouring in the church they make sure it might not be as much as it used to be. And I don't think this generation as is as church heavy as previous generations, but you have certain rappers like Kanye West, like Chance the Rapper, that invoke a lot of religiosity into their music and their dialogue that is unable to reach people. So in other words, you take one step forward and two step backwards. Mm. They're trying every day to get the young people to indoctrinate them, you know? And so you have other rappers. I can't name them all, but there are many of them who aspire to these you know, to this dogma, to this religious dogma. And they haven't lived. They don't have any. They have little life tenure. They haven't studied, but they're operating off of what they've heard, what their parents, how their parents have conditioned them, and have raised them.
You are so correct, because Kanye just left Jamaica a couple of weeks ago, and it was a landslide for him there, you know. So you are so correct, you know.
Right.
Anyway,
No, I was just saying. Again, in Jamaica, they were carrying around the king and the queen of England, or the prince and the princess.
Yep.
So, I mean, now, again, you can't separate Christianity from white supremacy.
Yes.
You can't.
Yeah.
You know, Christianity, you can't separate it because religion, Christianity stems, or racism stems from one group believing to be of more value and worse. You can't talk about racism without talking about the notion of superiority and inferiority. Racism, white supremacy, and Christianity are one and the same. They always have been. So Trump, on one hand, he says that blacks built this country. He was speaking before a group of blacks. I don't know, it was a college, but it was somewhere where there was mainly blacks there. And he says there's a lot of information regarding the role that blacks have played, of which most people, including blacks, are unaware. But then he also says that he wants to protect Christianity.
Yep.
Which is the same as saying that he wants to protect and preserve white supremacy.
Exactly.
You know, so you're speaking as Kanye used to say, out the side of your neck. You're not really making any sense there. You know, all I'm saying to people is it's time to evolve in our thinking. We have to expand our ideas. It's time to really look at religion, particularly Christianity, for what it really is. It's time to really look at the benefits of believing in a God, period. So if your deeds are good, which is really your God and your God, goddesses, your deeds, what would it matter what you believed?
Exactly.
Well, you know, that's interesting because, you know, my brother, who I consider a theologian, he's not, but he knows the Bible front and back. He became a minister at a young age. He's over 60-some years old, almost damn near 70. But anyway, I used to have a conversation with him. He don't mess with me because, as I told him, he's coming with a narrative of faith, and I'm coming with a narrative based on scholarly work by our scholars and our historians. And so when, as I said to him, so here you can have a man who is a good husband, a good father, a good neighbor, good to children, to elderly, you know, respects his ancestors because he understands the shoulders he stands on. You know, he's a good man, but he don't believe. He particularly don't believe in Jesus, you know. But here you have a guy, he's in the church. He's trying to screw everything in the church, takes money out of the church and so forth, you know. But that man, supposedly, because he believes in Jesus, he's going to heaven. But that other man who is a good man and provides and does things in a way that is humanly possible, he's going to hell because he don't believe in Jesus, you know. And so to me, that's crazy.
Well, you look at women. You look at women. The Bible takes the nature of women away. You talk about you want to believe in this as opposed to your deeds. When God of this character, because really he's a character in a book. So when this character in a book created Adam and Eve, or let's just say Adam, right? He did it by breathing, by forming him of the dust of the ground and breathing into the, you know, putting the breath of life into this unliving soul, and it became a soul, okay? Became an adult who could instantly speak a language. Now, when this God decided at some point in humanity, and you know this God has an inability to see the future, because if he had the ability to see the future, there wouldn't have been a Noah, you know, because the three people, you should have known that the people were going to go astray and run amok
right.
so much that you were going to have to create another world for them. So you already have presented that you have an inability to see the future. Now, when it came time that you thought that after many, many generations and thousands of years people had existed without the knowledge of this or without the knowing of this guy, or, you know, and his what he likes and what he dislikes, at some point you decide that you needed a son. So you create this son. Now, originally, you had created Adam and formed him out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils, as I stated. You could have easily saved several steps and done Jesus the same way. But for some reason, you had Jesus come through the birth canal. You used a woman. But in order to preserve the spotless nature that you wanted to, you know, of the woman, you said that she did not have intercourse, that, you know, but you went through the whole gestation period, this whole 9 months, and have this baby born through a woman. Why didn't you just make Jesus like you made this God? But you took the nature of the woman away. That's not the nature of a woman. The nature of a woman is to have a child by way of intercourse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How could you accept something that you know from what you see every day is not the nature of a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It is the nature of a woman to have intercourse with a man to have his children. Now,
yes.
Because I believe, though, I'm safe. Not because I think.
That's right.
But because of what I believe. If that's the case, your heaven is going to be extremely overcrowded. It's going to be an extremely dense place. You know, so these people in parts of the world who are experiencing these natural disasters, these are just hiccups of the earth.
Also, too, hurricane. I believe a lot of things that are happening is because the climate. There is.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, the climate, right.
Yeah, there is climate change.
The earth gives a hiccup because of what we're doing to it.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You see,
mm-hmm. you know, someone said the other day, they said, you know, God should lead by example and give
the devil forgiveness. So, you know, anyway, let me hang up, and I'll catch you listening. I got to hang up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, brother. We got another call. 646. 646. Good afternoon.
Yes. Good afternoon to your guests and to you, Brother O.T., Brother Pomaro. I just would like to ask you this question. In your dealing with these so-called crazy, sick Christians, have you ever asked the Christian, the question is, how do you accept something that was given to you by which who has oppressed, murdered, raped, and abused your people and told you to accept the treatment of you because of this book that I've given to you? Has anybody justified their believing in this absolute madness when, if you have ever asked them that?
Well, you know, over the years, brother, thank you for your question. I have asked that question. I never get an answer that I can fully comprehend or understand or make sense, or I can, you know, that was some justification or rationale for what they do. I think that question, though, really affects black people more when white people ask them that question. Now, I had that white person ask me that question, not because I was a believer. I went into a store to buy a 3-terabyte hard drive, which is extremely large. And the white guy that was working there, he said, "Wow, that's really large. Are you sure you need 3 terabytes? I said, "Yeah, I'm making a film." He said, "Oh, yeah, so you probably would, especially it's going to be in HD and all that." And he said, "Do you mind if I ask you, what's your film about?" And that was when I was making Contradiction. And I gave him the synopsis of the film. And he said, "Can I ask you a question? I don't want to offend you." And then I said, "Sure." And he said, "That's okay." And then I kept, having to encourage him that it's okay to ask me a question. I'll accept it no matter what it is. He said, "How could black people accept the same question you just asked?" He asked that. And I asked him to be in the film. He said that he couldn't be in the film, because he had had some history. His family had owned slaves, and they're very religious and this and that. I've asked people that, like I said, I could give you a variety of answers, but I think when white people ask black people that, which when I was at the Freedom from Religion Foundation, I encouraged many whites to ask blacks that question, because coming from a white, it would be, I think, more impactful in the sense that here's this white person asking me, because we really look silly. We look like poor imitations of our conquerors.
You know, I've asked the question to a numerous pork chop chicken eating preachers, and none of them have ever been able to answer the question. Now, you know what makes what you saying so profound is that a black person would think more about it if a devil asked him it than if I would ask them that, because they would just totally dismiss me asking them the question because they say I'm acting in blasphemousness or I'm anti-religious or something like this. It's just like I always say, how can an African woman ever sleep with a white man based on the history and the manner in which he's treated our women? But for some reason, I don't think our people think about or have an understanding of the brutality that this white man has showed against us and the evil, horrid things that he's done to us. So whereby I think that's one of the reasons we accept this sick religion or any other type of religion, because we don't want to face the fact that the person that's introduced it to us is our oppressor and abuser.
Well, we took a pragmatic means, right? They said, looking at Africa, okay? they said, well, damn, you know, here's a white man. He has the cargo, so to speak. And when he came over with the cargo, he had the weaponry. And when he had the weaponry, he also erected the cross. There might be something to this. So as a pragmatic means, maybe since he blessed them with such abundance of warfare and cargo, that maybe if I adapt his belief system, then I can have the same thing.
See, you may be right, brother.
So what you're doing is you're perverting your culture, who you are. You became who you are based off of how far the river was from where you live, based off of what the climate was like where you lived, based off of the music that was in your life, based off of the rules of engagement that you had, the rules of marriage and how you interpreted it, families and things like that. But now, when you saw that
we as a people don't understand the intricacies of culture. We don't understand in all truthfulness what our culture is, and our culture should represent how we move forward as a people for sovereignty. That's the thing that you know, we need to, maybe you should look at some point in time in your work. How do you justify non-understanding of one's culture to justify your oppression?
Well, first of all, you have to let go of your conqueror's culture to see your culture clearly. If you were standing in front of a mural, okay, and you had your nose pressed against the mural, you're not going to be able to see it until you step back and see what its true colors are.
Mm-hmm.
So black people are too close to this. Like I said, religion is a perversion of the brain. The only way that you can get your brain to accept the dogma, the irrationality of religion, is to consistently indoctrinate it. So once you take a step back from the indoctrination, you can see yourself more clearly. And what your brain will try to do is get back to its natural state. Your brain will try its best to get back to its natural state, just like the earth would. If you left it alone, it would get back to its normalcy. The normalcy of your mind is not to celebrate the holidays. They have nothing to do with you. It's to not to go out and spend all of your money when you're already struggling for the sake of some day called Christmas. It's your brain will be normal. I'll let you get this in. But your brain will be normal when you realize how abnormal it is to be a black person and to have your preacher say, open the books to Romans. Open the book to Hebrews.
Yeah.
Open the book to Galatians. Open your book to Corinthians. How normal is that where you have a group of parishioners that are black in there?
Go ahead, Jay.
All I can say to you is, brother, continue doing your great work and putting forward this message that we need to hear. But the Negro, unfortunately, is going to have to be totally deprogrammed. He's under a spell that has lasted for too many years.
Who is that you talking about?
He's talking about us.
Oh, okay.
We've been under a spell for too long, brother. We got to totally beat this program. And the sad thing is that because of religion and the sickness that we as a people suffer from, our love of religion, it's going to be real, real hard. Because I know you must catch hell all the time when you start saying the things that you're saying from certain Negroes.
I don't catch hell. That is one surprising thing, that I've been doing this for a long time, and I do not get the backlash. Probably because, no, I don't. I don't get the backlash that I had anticipated. It may be because I don't have the reach, enough reach, because bigger levels bring bigger devils. So I may need to have, be on other levels. Mm-hmm. But, and also, you have to know a little bit about what you believe in order to comment on or have an opposing point of view. You have to know about, and I find that believers really don't know.
That's right.
As much
they don't know
about their Bible as,
exactly.
as non-believers do.
Exactly.
And you know something, brother? You just made a clear and salient point, and I'm happy to hear that you don't get that type of backlash, but you just put it right there. You have so many brothers who ain't in the church that could teach the pork chop chicken eater more than he already know that's in the church. But for some reason, we haven't figured out how to educate those fools that are in the church believing this type of madness. And you know what's so crazy is? How is it that the richest preachers in the world are on the continent? And no, they're not T.D. Jakes and Cresno Sneaky Dollar and, you know, Cracker Osteen and the rest of them. These are Nigerians. These are Nigerian pastors. I don't know if the white church is behind them. I don't know who's...
Well, I mean, you know who's behind
it. I don't understand that.
It's the Roman Catholic Church. That's what church stands for. Okay, church is an acronym. To me, it stands for controlling humanity under Roman Catholic hierarchy.
Mm.
That's what it is.
Well, I just learned something.
That's a good acronym. I've got to write that one down. And what's the other acronym on faith?
Faith is false advertisement in the head. False. You know?
And of course, fear is religious faith.
Okay, yeah. Not faith, not the word, not faith, but religious faith. Okay,
false advertising in the head.
I don't need evidence of things not seen. You know, I believe that type of faith.
Hey, that's Stevie Wonder. Don't mess with Stevie now. That's one of his greatest songs right there.
Right, right.
Stitches. You know, that's in the top five.
Well, Jay.
You know, people don't listen to it.
Hey, Jay, to me, the most profound thing when he says, when you believe in things you don't understand, you suffer. Good. And we have been a suffering people.
Are we not suffering?
Oh, yeah, we're suffering.
Have we not suffered under religion?
Tremendously.
In all truthfulness, have we not suffered under religion in the manner in which we practice it? Because it's totally been used since its introduction into our acceptance of brutalization and abuse.
Well, let me just say this. We have suffered all except through a true African spirituality. We have suffered under Islam. We have suffered under Judaism, the Black Hebrew Israelites, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
They're all the same.
Right.
They're all Abrahamic religions.
Right.
Okay? Yep. So if you're playing dominoes and you hit the one domino, they're all going to fall.
Yep.
So once you knock Abraham in the head, they all fall like dominoes.
Yeah. 225, 225. Go ahead. 225.
Yeah,
yes, hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Oh, just one question. Could you elaborate or give examples of some folks who are doing things, you know, the way that, you know, that you think are more appropriate? Or any cultures that, you know, that are viable right now?
I mean, I know too many people to mention. There are so many people. I mean,
The reason I'm saying that specifically is that you're using. I'm hearing words like humanism and evolution and so mm-hmm. on. Those are fairly new constructs, and I'm wondering, are there any Black peoples that incorporate that kind of belief thinking into their models?
Right, absolutely. There are a lot of Black non-believer groups. The Black non-believer group here in Atlanta, you know, with Mandisa Thomas, Steve Hill, Candace Gorham, Richard Moore.
Well, they're truly an anomaly here, because this right
Norm Allen.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got I can name so many people. that are under that. I'm just saying, if we don't know, put it like this, all I'm saying is, in terms of the most basic definition of the word humanism, is to depend on human beings. We're going to have to, like, we can't, I mean, we're in a position now that we have to rely on each other. So I don't know what it's going to take beside other human beings in order to elevate, to resurrect black people. It's going to take humanity, human.
And that's what it has to take.
So many people that are into these movements. You've got Anthony Penn, Marcus Reyes. I mean, there's so many. I know, I guess because I'm in that circle.
Right. Is there anybody within that humanistic movement, and if you want to use the word atheist, in that particular movement of notoriety, somebody who is known, who is...
As far as black people are concerned?
Yes. As far as we are concerned.
As far as notoriety, not in the celebrity sense, not in that sense. I mean, we thought we had Morgan Freeman for a minute, but he vacillates back and forth. You don't know what he stands for.
Okay.
After 1 week. You know, we thought we had Oprah early, back in the early 90s, when she was having Deepak Chopra on the show, then he went and turned to Jesus, and now she's back super religious again. They don't really give black people like that a voice,
right?
Like they do whites.
Right.
Because look at Bill Maher, for example. Now, Bill Maher is somebody who would do that, but I don't know if religionless, if it was done by a black person, if it would have had the reach.
Right, that's
because
true.
Because you would have had more of a pushback.
Mm-hmm.
When the white community, you put out a movie called Religionless, you just don't have the pushback.
Right.
So I don't think that HBO would have had a problem. I'm not sorry, not HBO, but whatever, because he came out in the theaters. It might have been on HBO, but I know.
Yeah, it was. It was on HBO, but right, it came out initially in the theaters.
Right, in the theaters, right. So I don't think that, because my film, Contradiction, it was told that it was too black. That's what I was told.
Okay.
You know, and so I just don't think that they would know how to market such a thing. You know, but coming from whites who don't have the religious baggage that black people have, it was less threatening. And, you know, that is one of the things that, you know, when you believe in a God, you carry baggage with you in the first place. You got your own personal baggage that you carry with you.
Right.
You're going to have ideas about what he looks like. That's your personal baggage. They influence your fears, your bigotry, your stereotypes, your ignorance, your irrationality are all going into that equation. So when a black person is against those things, it's just too cutting edge, I think.
Well,
though non-religious, the nuns, as they call it, people that are not affiliated with religious, with religion, even though that number is growing, it's really not growing at the national rate, for black people, as it is at the national rate. In the world, Africa is lagging behind much of the world. See, because there's, again, we go back how we started this show. Job. It's Jobism.
Mm-hmm.
I have what I have because of God. All that I have is a result of God's blessing. So therefore, if I just keep sticking to it, I don't curse God, I stay with this God. Not only am I going to maintain what I have, but I'm going to get more. I'm going to be a more abundant with what I have. And that's the fairy tale that's so deeply embedded into the psychology of black people.
Well, we only have a few more minutes. Jay, you got something, man?
I just like to say to the brother. You
know, okay. Jay got it.
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
I just like to say thank you to the brother. Continuous success in your ongoing great works, and hopefully, you know, our people will wake up to see that the oppression that religion is putting on us, and move forward to a more sovereign state of mind without this type of madness. So thank you again, my brother, and Hotep, and peace and love.
Right on, Jay.
Peace.
Okay. And Brother Pugh.
Just briefly. You know, when you want paradigmatic change, that reminds me of Dolomite. You know, it sounds like your story is that you've got a framework that folks aren't familiar with, and so you know that's paradigmatic. So that movie.
Yeah,
it is
in a way, and it's very elusive. Because when you cut the TV on, you back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got a lot of the religious communities claiming that we're taking over. I don't know what world they're in, what planet they're on, because religion runs 24 hours on television and radio. I don't see this kind of, you know, thing that we're doing have nearly the reach that religion has. So it is a lofty thing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I just think that a lot of our answers are not as hard as we think.
Well, and by the way, the reason that the religions critique secularism is the same way that capitalists, for example, critique any little marginal gain by labor. They're looking at the rate of change of profits. And they're mm-hmm. saying that, hold it, I've got a people who were getting no mileage, and now they're getting some mileage. And as a result, what I need to do is I need to nip their rate of change in the bud. And so so it's not a question of whether or not they see themselves as losing. They just see themselves on a trajectory that ultimately could lead to loss. And they're just
Absolutely.
Anticipating that.
Great point.
Interesting. One of the other things in the movie that you're getting ready to do, I think of Ibram Kendi and Stamp from the Beginning when he talks about the religious history of this country. And Joel Edward Goza, America's Unholy Ghost, where he talks about the European basis for religion in this country. And then finally, what is his name? Yuval Noah Harari and Homo Sapiens, where he talks about, you know, the religious introduction in this society, period. I don't know if you're going to incorporate those, but those might be useful.
I'm familiar with Joel Edward Goza, the American.
Oh, okay, in Houston. Okay, right.
Yes.
He, I think he's got something to say. But now, you made one statement that I just want to speak to. You know, the notion that Christianity is white supremacist, I think that when we look at the history of monotheism, you know, if you imagine, you know, the theory is that monotheism essentially arose from, Imhotep. And then from there, the Jews appropriated it, and it became only peculiar to them. What Christianity was essentially an expansion of the Jewish idea to non-Jewish people, and what Islam was essentially a critique of Christianity, saying the Christian expansion of Hebrewism was good. But the Christians don't practice what they preach, and so what we want to do is incorporate that. So the notion of that these Abrahamic traditions are white supremacists,
if monotheism is white supremacist, monotheism as it's practiced, that's what I'm saying. As it's practiced, that is a form of white supremacy.
Yes.
If you look at it, you know, you're dealing with it. You've got this singular being, this authoritative being, this being that requires your obedience, this being that requires your undivided attention, and that you must, there's a punishment if you disobey him. To me, that sounds like the slave master. It sounds like the master on the cotton field.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that it's implemented, the way that it's gone about, the way that we apply this whole notion of monotheism is very akin to the plantation. There's a seamless transition in believing in a supreme being and believing in a supreme human being. We were to see that slave master and God as one and the same. And that's the same way that we're still seeing it.
All right, my brothers. I appreciate it, Brother Jeremiah Kamara. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You can visit me on jeremiahkamara.com. Watch the slave sermons on YouTube.
Yep.
You know, and be looking out for the film Holy Hierarchy, The Religious Roots of Racism in America.
When is that going to come out, you think?
I'll give you a heads up.
Please
this
do.
Year. Okay. Definitely this year. No doubt
okay.
about it.
Well, listen, I want to try
to... We're already in November, so it will be out this year.
Well, I definitely want to get you back on, and especially when that comes out, I will promote whatever you're doing. Because to me, the crux of the problem that we have as African people, why we cannot come together, why we cannot develop functional unity, is because of the religions that have been imposed upon us that prevents us from seeing who we are as African people and coming together around that. Malcolm said it best. He said, when I come to the meeting to talk about what these Caucasians are doing to us, I'm leaving my religious philosophy, which is El Islam, back at home, or I put it in my back pocket, because if I start to talk about that, and you being a Christian, you're going to try to, you know, there's a problem there, because they don't do to us what they have done to us because we're Christian, Muslims, Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah Witness, whatever, Omega Psi Phi, AKA whatever, NACP, they do it because we're African people. And we as African people, if we could break that monopoly, release that vice grip, we could come together as African people and do for ourselves. So I thank you, brothers. Thank you so much. We in this program like we in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, have a great weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Brothers, Bibi Fahodio. Bibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodio, family. Peace.